RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Monday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with...
Fresh new week, Monday morning, Val, and...
Beans! So a couple things. Number one, we are excited. I don't know if you realize this, Frank. I didn't text you to tell you, but we are now on Spotify.
Oh, I thought we were always on Spotify.
No, we were never on Spotify.
Well, this is a great day, then.
Yes, we're on Spotify. So I did a whole thread yesterday where I told everybody where they can listen to us because some people don't know. And two, you have a construction party going on at your house.
Yes, yes. The driveway is being redone. So if you hear bulldozers and clown car honking, that's just because things are happening over here. So I will probably be, when it gets really bad, I'll mute my microphone to try to save face. But other than that, you know.
So... we had a somewhat more calm weekend-ish.
Yeah.
Sort of.
I was happy with it. I mean, I'm just happy it's over. Are you there?
I'm here. I don't even know what to say.
what's happened? I had a protest in my town.
You did?
Yesterday. Yeah. Then the day before that, there was a protest in the town next door. And then there's another town next door that's going to be demonstrating soon, too.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. A lot of weird stuff happening, but still.
Demonstrating for what exactly?
It's just no justice, no peace in towns that don't have any problems with their policing.
I see.
So there's that going on. There's also quite a few locals now that are compiling very passive-aggressive, tongue-in-cheek boycott lists of all of the businesses that boarded up their shops out of fear.
Oh.
After 2.5-3 months of being shut down and dangling by a thread, that they should take any kind of extra precaution to make sure that their life's work is not destroyed based on what is really going on around the country. So there's some people who would, they're not saying boycott anybody. They're saying here's a list of people who did not close up, and we should all thank them with our business. And that's what's going on right now in my town, even though 90% of the businesses are Hispanic owned. That's going to be interesting.
They don't care.
No, they don't.
So
no, they don't.
They're the next thing now, because it's never enough, Frank. These people are never pacified. They always want more. It is never enough. They arrested the guy that kneeled on the neck. It didn't matter. They wanted big, more charges that he'll never be convicted on. He'll never be convicted on them. Interestingly enough, I believe this trial for this dude is set in October. What a coincidence.
Oh. Oh. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So wait, is that one a grand... So is there a grand jury that's...
I don't know. Oh, goodness. Anyway, long story short, they want reparations. They want you to apologize to your friends, all kinds of different things they're demanding. It'll never be enough. It doesn't matter what you do. If we did everything they asked, it would not be enough. They'd come up with something else. The new thing here, and a lot of places are signing on with this, is to defund the police, completely defund the police, so that there's no policing in these communities whatsoever. And in New York City, Frank, 600 or so people have retired, I believe, in the past week.
Good for them. Good for them. Why put your life at risk? You can't do it. You're not being allowed to do a job. And every time that you're told to not do something, there's one less tool you can use to keep yourself alive.
Yeah.
And that's good. Good for them.
I said we should start like a fundraiser for all of these officers in New York City so that they have some cushion to retire or leave the job on until they can find something new or get the hell out of there. That godforsaken place. I don't even want to visit. I don't want to go. There's nothing good. I'm sorry. I know you live there, but what is happening?
I don't live in the city.
No, but you live in New York.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm sorry. Like I know that, you know, like my husband still loves New York and likes New York. Well, he did anyway, but like what, I don't even know if going to Long Island is a good idea, to be honest, because I have a bunch of friends still there that are like, it is like a crazy town here. Because those people the middle class on Long Island are going to be the ones that get screwed because of what New York City's doing. I know it sounds silly, but it's true. All the money is concentrated there. State taxes are going to go up so they can clean up this mess. I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no more reconciliation for them in the federal arena because Trump stopped that.
Good. Well,
I know.
Good. I don't know. Listen, you don't have to. You don't have to. I don't take any offense by people pointing out what the hell's going on over here.
It just feels like a cesspool. It really does. It's sad. Yeah. I was thinking about it. I was supposed to go up to New York because a family member's getting married, which was postponed and canceled, which is a whole different story we'll get into because I might need your help out there, guys. But her wedding was canceled. This poor girl. Anyway, she was supposed to have a bachelorette party at a nice rooftop lounge in New York City. And I'm like, it probably doesn't exist anymore.
No.
Like, we would take the train into the city, spend the night in the city, go out, have a couple drinks. Yeah, not happening anymore. Like,
what the hell? I have a couple of friends that they had their wedding canceled in March. Had to reschedule it for July. We'll see what happens there.
This wedding was canceled in May. Then it was canceled in June. Then they canceled the September one. Now the place just completely closed down. Wedding's been paid for.
So this is what everybody's up against.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's insane.
So yeah, I heard that young guest on Allison Camerota. Well, this is what happens when the adults they have no real way of convincing other adults what to do, and they start empowering the children.
Wow.
Stand back. The child has something to say.
Like that mayor, my goodness.
Oh, you're talking about that Frey guy?
Oh, my Lord.
That was the camera angles that we have of that. It looked, I don't know. Like I said this last night. I was on a friend's stream last night. I helped him co-host. And I said to myself, he had to have gotten something sexual out of that. Like, there had to have been some kind of weird sexual gratification of that humiliation.
It's the only thing that makes any sense.
He had the mask on, and he's being all these hundreds of people crowding around him, and he says, "I will not totally disband the police," and they start cursing at him, and they start doing the shame chant from Game of Thrones. And I said, "When I said that Bernie Sanders is the High Sparrow from Game of Thrones, I said this is true, and this is the Sparrows, the entire legion of nincompoops. This is it.
So
it's insane.
It is insane. So we're seeing this all over the place in these Democrat cities where their policies have allowed this stuff to, I mean, it's just so hypocritical. But I wanted to play two clips because Camerota in her, I don't know what the best word to describe her is. You probably have a few choice words to describe her. You're muting yourself to not say them.
Yeah, I know.
Frank is using the construction as an excuse.
To not say things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So here's two clips. This one here is about the vote to dismantle the police department.
About reform. The word dismantle is intentionally different than reform. This is more than reform. This is dismantling. I mean, activists who support this are calling this a police-free future.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of us were asked if we could imagine a future without police back in 2017 when we were running for office. And I answered yes to that question. To me, that future is a long way away, and it would take an enormous amount of investment in things that we know work to keep people safe. I mean, for a lot of folks in our community, stable housing is a safety issue. Having access to healthcare is a safety issue.
I'm just stopping it there. What? Having access to healthcare is a safety issue.
Yeah,
that's a safety issue. But having a free roaming anarchist gang in your neighborhood because there's no cops is not a safety issue.
No, this is where the stupidity really comes back around and is going to hurt a lot of people for a very long time. Because, of course, as we know, they're not only very pompous and sure themselves in this righteousness of theirs, but they're so stupid. And they're so misguided that they're violent. They're violent to, they get violent to defend it as well. She said, we need to do a lot of, there's a lot of investing we have to do to be able to get to that point in the future where there are no police. But see, the thing here is from the get-go, you ever see Ready Player One?
No.
Okay, never mind then. But from the get-go, it's the investing that caused all of this. It's the divesting. The only way that anybody is really going to be able to prepare a country or a city or a state to be able to live with less and less police presence is if you start becoming more conservative than anybody out there that you think is ultra conservative. It's the only way.
It's the opposite direction. It's extremist to the right, not extremist to the left. Well, not as far as authoritarianism, obviously, but yeah.
Capitalism has
to be flourishing.
You need people to be independent. She's talking about, and of course, what is she paying reference to? She's talking about the most dependent state you can get. And we already know what comes out of that. We know how it tears apart families, and which is the root of all evil for creating unstable societies with malcontent children and it causes problems. This is where all behavioral problems and the cultural decay comes from. It's from all those well-intended investments from decades ago. We're paying the piper right now. Mm-hmm. And they want to keep doubling down. They think that is the road to paradise.
Here we go.
And so having, I think one thing folks are asking is to stop investing so much money in this militarized police force and instead invest in the things that our community really needs. So, I know the statement was bold and I stand by that bold statement, but the work ahead of us will be long. It will include every member of our community. It has to. And, I think we have.
So how are you going to get every member of your community on board with this? Everyone, Frank. How?
Well, obviously, it's a rhetorical question because you're not going to. And B, it doesn't matter that you're not going to because they speak as if they're speaking for everybody.
Yep.
They always that, what the American people want. I mean, everybody does that. It's the politician thing to kind of say it. But I mean, this is just it. They're always going to ignore their own voices.
Here we go.
Tracy, think about it. All of these bad parts of any particular state or city or community, whatever, there's a lot of innocent people there that just can't leave. They don't have any prospects to get on out of there, and they're not bad people. They're not criminals, and they're stuck and they're scared. Those are the people who call the cops. I mean, most of the stories that we hear about people and their interactions with police is usually. It's not because cops are walking the beat. It's usually because a concerned neighbor in town is calling something in that they think is suspicious or that they're worried about, or there's some kind of a fight or a congregation going on outside in the streets that they want broken up, they're scared about stray bullets or whatever the hell it is. Nobody even thinks about that most of these people, most of these police are called by concerned citizens that don't want this to go away.
What do they think is going to happen when they're not allowing these people to have guns to defend themselves? There's no police. And the only people that have the guns are the people that are going to waltz into their homes, rape, pillage, and steal in that order. I mean, can you imagine the amount of domestic violence that's going to increase because of this?
Yeah, they want cops walking around with Twinkies in their holsters. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, let's finish.
Very immediate things. We have a state action against our police department, which gives us legal mechanisms in the very short term. There's lessons from all over the country, all over the world that we're looking to take immediate steps while we work toward building the systems that we would need to imagine that future.
So they dismantle the police department before they have the systems they need.
Right. This is like somebody saying, I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to find something else. This is exactly the same kind of a thing that gets us in trouble whenever we go and topple a dictator somewhere in the Middle East.
Yeah, because what's there? The vacuum.
Same exact thing. You destroy everything. You leave. And then, of course, they'll figure it out. Well, I have an election to win, so I just want to be bold right now. We want to be bold in the next 4 or 5 months, and we'll deal with the fallout after. I'm telling you, it's going to be a disaster. Whoever tries this, it's going to be a disaster.
Oh, yeah.
Do you understand that the word dismantle or police free also makes some people nervous? For instance, what if in the middle of the night my home is broken into? Who do I call?
Yes, I mean, I hear that loud and clear from a lot of my neighbors. And I know, and myself too, and I know that that comes from a place of privilege because for those of us for whom the system is working, I think we need to step back and imagine what it would feel like to already live in that reality.
What would it feel like, Frank?
Yeah, see, this is our time where we should completely dismantle society so that everybody out there should feel every day abject terror.
I mean,
we should work for a place where we can bring everybody into a realm of abject terror and instability.
She has no answer for what happens if somebody's robbing you in the middle of the night. Well, you're privileged. That's her answer?
No, her answer is you know, I understand it's scary, but maybe you should live with that fear a little bit like everybody else does.
Yeah.
She's telling you we need to go through a period of atonement where everybody's lives are upended, where you can't even defend yourself. If you're going to take away the police, you can't even defend yourself because, of course, as you all know, especially in places like New York, it's harder and harder to even shoot somebody. That comes into your house with ill intent over
there. Yeah, because you're the one who ends up going to jail.
Yeah.
Insanity.
Yeah. So you want to see where they're really trying to create privilege. It's for the criminal cat class.
Here.
Where calling the police may mean more harm is done. And so in the very immediate, we have to lean into whatever changes we can make in our existing police department. You know, I think we look to cities like Camden, New Jersey that completely...
Oh, yeah. Camden, New Jersey. Have you ever been to Camden?
Yep. One doesn't forget.
No, they don't. Gosh.
If you've ever been to Camden, it's a paradise. We should do.
We should have a picnic right there. We should broadcast the show from the.
Oh my God.
Here.
Structured their department as we build up systems, and we've already done that. We are not starting from scratch. We have invested in community-based safety strategies.
They have knowledge
in our community across the city. We've done an analysis of all the reasons people call 911 and have looked.
Ooh, they've done a little study, Frank.
And what do they say about the 911 calls?
I don't know. Let's see.
That ways we can shift the response away from armed police officers into a more appropriate response for mental health calls, some domestic violence calls, for health-related issues. And so the groundwork is laid already in Minneapolis.
The words, I mean, they always have things to say, but you can stop them anywhere and ask them, expand on that, please. So if you've got a domestic violence call or if something is bad, you and you need response that can escalate force appropriately, if it's a volatile situation, you want a psychiatrist to be called in, a mental health. If it's a health emergency, you call 911 and they get EMS to show up. It's not usually a cop shows up along with the ambulance, but the cop doesn't show up looking to kill the person who's having a heart attack.
No,
I don't even understand if it's a health emergency.
They're saying that's what happens. They're saying that she's basically saying that armed police officers should not respond to health emergencies because they may kill the person who's having a health emergency. Like that's literally what she's insinuating.
They may shoot the person that is dying on their couch.
Yeah.
That can't get up.
Or, you know, you've seen this a bunch of times. This is something that always concerns me. And honestly, it really does. If there is somebody who is mentally unstable, having an episode or an attack or some kind of weird thing going on, and the police are called to the house and that person is acting erratically, the police have their guns drawn, the person doesn't listen, and you see that person be injured or killed. I've seen that happen so many times. That is terrifying to me. That's worrisome. If somebody has autism and they don't know, if somebody has, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I don't think they should be disarmed. I just think that officers need to understand that, you know, or the person calling police needs to be very clear with them about what the problem is. You know what I'm saying? That's an education thing. That's not disarm the police and send them into horrible medical situations. This next clip is the one that really took the cake for me. I loved that this question was asked because
say Democrat, are you worried that you have just handed President Trump a great talking point or slogan or battle cry for his reelection to be able to say, see, Democrats want to get rid of your police. First, they come to take away your guns, as he says. Now they're taking away your police officers. Does that concern you?
You know, that's why I said at the beginning that it starts with telling the truth. And I think we've been afraid of a lot of things, of that, those political dynamics, of what would happen in our city, you know, to have our police force hearing these kinds of words. And
what is she talking about?
It's just words. It's just sound. They open them. Like, you know, whenever the cat runs around the house and just stops at our feet, looks up at us and starts screaming, I just say, open my mouth and words come out. That's just it. It's just sounds that come out of the mouth. They're like little, I don't know, animals.
What
I don't know.
What is it? Am I wrong? I mean, what is she even talking about?
Nothing. It's just sounds.
Let's finish.
Here is what we have to really work through, because again, that's the fear that so many in our community are facing. That's the fear that we see, you know, from George Floyd's family or the family of Jamar Clark or Justine Damon, who are also killed by Minneapolis police, who have told us we never want to see this happen again. And so those efforts that we have taken so far to stop this, to make sure no one is killed in this way.
So their answer for stopping police who unfortunately kill people is to just remove all the police. Well, if we take the police away, they can't kill anyone anymore.
But listen, they list names. List names of people who have died because of police force. They list names, and that's and there you go. That's it.
She didn't answer the question.
They never do.
I mean, Allison Camerota basically just told everybody the exact thing the Democrats did. I mean, you have a bunch of people. Extremists, that's all there are anymore. There are no middle of the road Democrats anymore. They don't exist. Don't care what you say. There is no middle of the road Democrat. There just isn't. They're all extremists, and they're all running around thinking that this 10% at most percentage of the population that thinks that it's a good idea to completely remove the police are the majority. They're not. They look like morons to every thinking person out there in this country, saying to themselves right now, well, I'm against police brutality. I'm against racism. But the police? That's what's happening.
Yep.
It's insanity. And something else that I wanted to go over, I read this morning. Well, listen to this first. Here's Dan Bongino on Fox this morning, I believe it was. He's talking about what will happen if police departments are disbanded and defunded.
You know, Brian, if this goes through, this defund the police abomination, it will be, and this is not hyperbolic, the single most catastrophic, deadly public policy decision we've seen in the modern history of the United States. Make absolutely no mistake about it. People will die, real people, not Hollywood nonsense, not movie types. I mean, real people, kids, teenagers, and adults will die. Think about the continuum of from low-level property crimes to murderers and terrorists, the message that sends to all of them. Go from the low end first. Why even bother paying the train fare? Jump in the turnstile. Just get rid of the turnstile. Who's going to pay? Oh, no, they'll pay because they're going to do the right thing. Really? You sure about that? Most people are just going to walk right through. What kind of a message do you think this sends to a murderer or a terrorist or a gang member or a drug dealer slinging crack on the corner of a neighborhood? Now that the police are gone, you think they're going to go to the local social worker? Listen, God bless social workers. As I said this weekend on Fox and Friends, and I mean, they do great work. They are entirely, completely, 1,000% unprepared to go face to face with a murderer or a terrorist and try to use Maslow's hierarchy of needs to talk them out of killing people. Brian, this is complete insanity. I lived through the exact opposite with Rudy Giuliani when he bumped up the police force and said, we're going to take care of every low-level crime and cut off the high-level crime. This is the exact opposite, and I assure you, chaos will result.
Yeah.
Pretty straightforward there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So talking about that, I had a very awesome article from Shipwrecked Crew, who wrote it for Red State, that he sent to me to read. And it is really, really good. It's a little long of an article. I tweeted it out this morning, but it's titled "Social Justice Warrioring: Is That Now Taught at the FBI Academy?" Because you had that picture of all these FBI agents kneeling down, right? All these FBI agents not only kneeling down, but applauding the protesters. He says a lot of agents I know who are aware of what I'm doing have been directing messages my way, asking me to denounce on their behalf what those agents did. They're outraged by it. And what he goes on to say is basically that the FBI has just once again politicized itself.
It's got to go. I don't care. It's got to go. And it's all across the country, too. Even getting back to what Dan Bongino just said in that clip there. I saw the police chief from Boston flopping around on his belly like a fish.
Yeah.
Scream. I asked myself, why the hell would anybody ever pay a parking ticket in that town again if your police chief is flopping around on his belly like a fish? And people are gathered around him to look at this performance art. It's so unbecoming, and it's frightening, because you're like, okay, I'm supposed to trust these people to have my best interests.
Well, yeah, and back to this article real quick. I just want to go through some of what he says, because think about it. This handful of special agents, by kneeling down and applauding groups like Antifa and Black Lives Matter, can now be said to have endorsed the political views of those organizations and prejudged the case against the officers which the FBI is investigating. The hard fact is that their motivation for kneeling down doesn't matter. No matter how well-intentioned they may have been, they have done damage to themselves within the Bureau and to the image of the Bureau, with millions of Americans who are already mulling over reasons to question their confidence in the FBI. He says the FBI exonerated Hillary Clinton of criminal activity on the basis that no reasonable prosecutor would actually pursue criminal charges under the circumstances. There's little doubt her actions violated federal laws. They pursued Donald Trump and his campaign for years over facially dubious allegations of coordination with the Russian government, and continued that pursuit long after it knew the allegations were baseless. In doing so, they falsified evidence and withheld crucial information that would have brought the entire fiasco to a halt years earlier. The FBI agents who knelt took sides in a political dispute that currently divides the country over enforcing the law and protecting the rights of others. Each of those episodes can be attributed to a relative handful of people among the FBI workforce of 15,000 special agents. But the combined effect of the three is to tell roughly half the country or more, the FBI is a political opponent. Political opponents of Hillary Clinton and political supporters of President Trump believe the FBI put its thumb on the scale of justice in each of those investigations, to the detriment of their worldview. Tens of millions of Americans who looked on via their television screens in horror over the past 10 days as cities were looted and burned see FBI agents sworn to uphold the law kneeling down and applauding two organizations that those tens of millions of Americans see as largely responsible for the mayhem and the destruction. I mean, can't get better than that. It's just true. Which, I know there's a lot of stuff today, but it brings me to A.G. Barr's interview with Catherine Herridge over the weekend. Not Catherine Herridge, Face the Nation over the weekend. Did you hear it by chance?
Now, I saw a tweet about it, and I saw a couple things about the people applauding A.G. Barr for a few things he said in it, but I had not been able to watch it in any great length.
I seriously almost was pondering playing the entire thing here on the show and going through it with you, because it was so good. The host keeps on saying to him, you know, you used chemicals on the crowd, you tear gassed the crowd, and he keeps saying, we did not do that. Your report, this is an abject lie. What you're saying is a lie. He got angry with her because she kept on trying to push this propaganda. She goes, well, we had reporters there that said there was no violence. And A.G. Barr's like, I was there. There was. I was there. They were basically talking about how they had to move the perimeter a block away because these people would not listen to, you know, they were violent rioters. Here, let's see if this is the clip about, yeah.
And you believe that what the Park Police did using tear gas and projectiles was appropriate?
Here's what the media is missing. This was not an operation to respond to that particular crowd. It was an operation to move the perimeter one block.
And the methods they used, you think, were appropriate? Is that what you're saying?
When they met resistance, yes. They announced three times they didn't move. By the way, there was no tear gas used. The tear gas was used Sunday when they had to clear 8th Street to allow the fire department to come in to save St. John's Church. That's when tear gas was used.
There were chemical irritants, the park.
No, there were not chemical irritants. Pepper spray is not a chemical irritant. It's not chemical.
Pepper spray, you're saying, is what
balls,
was used.
Pepper balls.
Right.
I mean, he's like sitting there in utter disbelief that this person is so stupid. This interviewer, this propagandist sitting in front of him, so you believe then that this was the right way to go? Like, it's the law, lady. It doesn't matter what I believe. It was just.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't back down. God bless him. It's just, I had so much to pull from this interview.
No, he didn't back down. That was great. But then again, it doesn't, it marches on. I've seen that all over the place. And Trace, I know you've seen it too, especially when it comes to St. John's and the narrative about the photo op.
Oh yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, the photo op after
suppressed peaceful protests that led to the burning of a church just for a photo op. And who came and actually parodied that? Rouhani in Iran.
Yep.
I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yep.
You see the people who have stood together shoulder to shoulder. Makes you really wonder what the hell was going on around New Year's Eve with the Iranians. Makes you really wonder what was going on and who was really trying to goad people into war.
Yeah.
Whose side everybody is. It really makes you wonder.
Not really. I mean, this is just... And then, again, we've talked about the military, former military coming out and talking about basically an armed coup at this point. It just makes me sick. And then you have what's going on over at the New York Times, where Tom Cotton was allowed to publish an op-ed that was a little bit contrary to what the woke, you know, social justice warrior snowflake crybabies at the New York Times wanted. And the editor had to resign. This is just... It's just insane. It really is. And we have... Hold on, I'm looking through here. I know you muted, so it's fine. Hold on.
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm listening to everything you say.
I know. I had a clip and it just moved. Do you ever have that?
Oh, yeah.
You have a clip waiting and on the Twitter timeline and it just moves?
Things pop up. Oh, yeah. 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 That's why I as soon as I see something I like, I have to email it to myself and or bookmark it in my Chrome or something.
Yeah. Otherwise, it turns into nonsense. Hold on. I'm just going to pause it real quick. So we're just going to move on to something else because I can't find the clip and I don't want to keep us waiting. So... over the weekend on Saturday, there was a letter, an open letter to President Trump that came out from Vigano, who is the former Archbishop still, right?
Mm-hmm. Archbishop. I don't know. I think that he flew the coop. I forget what the hell was going on there because he was the one that was put in charge of coming over here, investigating what was going on with the Vatican Bank. And he was the one that started stumbling upon a lot of the pedophilia, the satanic ritual abuse stuff. He's whenever I hear Vigano pop up, I listen at attention. When I saw that this letter was going around, I was wondering if it was real because, first of all, it was sent to me on Saturday as well, but it was dated for the 7th.
Yeah.
So
he probably meant to release it the 7th because it was a Sunday and D-Day, okay. Right?
D-Day was the 6th.
Was the Saturday. Okay. So, yeah. So, he probably wanted to release it on the 7th, or he made a mistake with the date. I mean, that doesn't really matter. I could date a letter for the 15th and send it out to everybody on the 10th.
Right.
It's not like, you know what I mean? Speaking of which, we're going to talk about this whole Barack Obama photo thing today, too. I don't know if you know about that.
What, the George Floyd thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, we'll get to that in a few minutes if we have time at the end. But he wrote this open letter that basically says it's Holy Trinity Sunday. He wrote on it. I guess it was meant for release then, but Laura Ingraham has retweeted it, and a lot of official people with blue check marks next to their name have said it's real, so it's real. It's basically a letter that says we are in a spiritual war of good versus evil, calls out all the BS that we're seeing in front of us and how, you know, the devil, he says that the devil also does the same thing, you know, in practice as what they're doing. It's 3 pages long almost, and talks about the mainstream media lying and basically says we are in a spiritual battle of good versus evil. And tell us a little bit about, because I know a little bit, but it seems like you know a lot more than I do, what he did.
Well, he was the guy that was appointed by, I believe, Benedict to you know, write the books over there at the Vatican Bank. And I think that that is what led him to finding McCarrick and all of the pedophilia in the D.C. Archdiocese and elsewhere there, too. And there was more. He started getting getting a lot of threats and whatnot. So I have to, what I'm thinking here is now that I know that this has been shared by so many people who have, you know, clout and stuff. I'm thinking maybe I get somebody to come on in, like maybe Timothy Gordon to come on in to talk about Vigano and his work and where this leaves us, because that would be amazing.
Yeah. Because a lot of people didn't understand the significance of him.
Yeah, hold on. You know, pause again.
All right, go for it.
All right, so here's an LA Times article from August 2018. Who is Carlo Maria Vigano, the man accusing Pope Francis of covering up sex abuse? The Roman Catholic Church went into crisis mode this week after Vatican official published an 11-page letter alleging that Pope Francis and U.S. Catholic leaders covered up sexual abuse by an American cardinal. The unusually detailed and direct letter, Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano, the former Vatican ambassador to the U.S., made unsubstantiated claims that Francis and several American cardinals and archbishops had teamed up over the years to protect Theodore McCarrick, who was a cardinal. Was one of the most powerful figures in the church. He released the letter as the Pope was visiting Ireland, blamed the church leaders for protecting widespread homosexual current in the Vatican, and said Francis must resign. He also had said church leaders had pro-gay ideology that ran counter to longstanding church prohibitions against homosexual acts. Because this was around the time that they found that they found those dormitories in Vatican City,
yeah,
that were actually set up. They were set up as offices that were charged with actually handling issues of immorality within the church. And they were busted for having these drug-fueled gay orgies there with gay prostitutes. And it was along those way. It was after that that they found actually a little bit more information that may have pointed towards some other kind of satanic activity that was going on. And it was a real an amazing turn of events. And Vigano's, that's why I perk up whenever I hear his name. So there's more there. I gotta get a guest on for this.
Everybody pay attention to Frank. I can't focus on this part right now, so he'll do it.
Okay, either way, go ahead.
Yeah, so there's that. And then there is okay, my husband plays video games. He really likes to. I do too, actually. I like to play video games myself when I have any spare time. I kind of like go to sort of like veg out and play some video games. Every single splash screen on these games now is some kind of tribute to Black Lives Matter. Everyone. Soros just bought tons of Activision stock. Makes sense. So all we're seeing is these tributes to Black Lives Matter and, you know, social justice splashing in front of us as we're trying to play video games. As a matter of fact, there was a guy who is a video game reviewer who posted a video the other day. It was about a minute long where he was saying, like, F this. You know, I this is the only thing I have in my life that I do to have any fun. And now I'm basically being told whenever I go to play a video game that because I'm a white guy, I'm a bad person and you don't like me. So yep. I'm now, he was standing in front of all of the games he's ever bought, like this huge bookshelf full of them. He's like, I'm done. I'm never playing another video game again. You people can F off, and I'm finished with this.
Finished with that, finished with the NFL. That's it.
It's consumed everything. Levi's. I mean, and Levi's is partnering with Rock the Vote. All of these big corporations don't have a single person with anything between their legs there anymore.
Yeah. No, it's pretty bad.
I mean, look what happened to Target. How much money did Target lose? I mean, Target lost so much money. Oh, Lord. I will never shop at PetSmart again.
Well, I've never been there. Actually, I probably have. I probably have at some point, but I don't have any pets that I don't have to vote. I don't have to vote for.
You don't have to vote for pets usually, but let's read what this says from PetSmart, okay? This is a pivotal moment in our country. It's a time to come together in support of basic human and civil rights and to love one another unconditionally. That's why, this is me, we're about to love people of color more than you. You ready? The belief in unconditional love, that very important lesson we learn every day from our pets, is the heart of PetSmart. We promote belonging and inclusiveness in an environment where individuals with diverse backgrounds and talents can excel. But we can and must do better. It isn't enough to say that we value diversity or to speak about inclusion in general terms. Now is the time to listen attentively and be clear in our words and our actions. Now is the time to state plainly and unequivocally that Black lives matter and to do our part to ensure that this is our truth. So right now, we're working on actions including 1. $1 million scholarship fund to support all associates of color to advance their educational aspirations. Grants from PetSmart charities supporting pets and pet parents in underrepresented communities. And enhanced development and recruiting to improve Black representation at PetSmart. At PetSmart, we believe pets make us better people, but we know that conscious actions lead to real progress. That's why we must all commit to standing with our Black communities, to taking meaningful action, to being held accountable, and to be saying what we must until it is no longer necessary. Black lives matter. So what about all your white employees that can't afford to go to college? What about them?
Yeah, I don't know. It's, I think to myself when I hear that, I say, oh, wow. I'm trying to imagine the world that people see where I guess people are apprehensive do we really think that people's lives don't matter? I'm just trying to understand this world that they're projecting onto the greater public. The time has finally come, like as if we've been dragging our feet. I don't know. I don't think that all lives or Black Lives Matter just yet. Just, you know, check in with me next year. Can we just put this off another year, valuing the lives of Black people? Let's just push it back again. No, this is the year it unequivocally happens. I'm just trying to imagine the world that they live in inside their heads.
They're the ones that are causing the inequality by doing this.
This has touched
places that you'd never expect it to. So let's talk about this real quick. For years now, maybe a decade, I have listened to something called ASMR to go to sleep. At night, it calms me down. It puts me in a place where I could just close my eyes and fall asleep. Takes me 5 minutes, fall asleep. That's it. It's just the way it is. That is where people go to relax. It is one of the most stress-relieving things for some people that they can listen to. Well, there is one woman who does the most amazing work that just is, she's one of my favorite people to listen to. And she has had a rule on her channel for years now that she does not talk about politics. She does not talk about religion. This is a place for everybody. You come here, you have no idea what my politics are, and that's the way I want to keep it. Because this is for everybody, and this is where you come to get away from that crap, right? Well, this other big YouTuber girl with like a million subscribers decided that this meant that the woman who said that was racist.
Yep.
And sent all of her subscribers to attack and harass this woman until she started literally getting death threats against her children.
Yep.
And then the other woman that started that whole mess comes out apologizing. I'm so sorry. I didn't realize what I was doing. I'm so sorry.
I didn't realize when I sent my death squad after you.
Oh, I was up until 3 a.m. watching these videos on it. I couldn't fall asleep. See the antithesis of why I went there in the first place. This poor woman.
I mean, I have a lot of, there's quite a few people in my life that create content on the internet that is completely non-political, And, everybody's just trying to lay low and trying to continue to provide something for people that you know they may want to run away from, to jump on into, because everybody else is doing this. It's unavoidable. And I know at least a few people who have said, you know, I would say about maybe 45% at least of the people who are coming out and saying, I've had to put off saying this, or I'm sorry it took me so long, or blah, blah, blah. It's all to preserve their livelihoods.
Yeah.
There's such a high percentage of people right now who are trying to put a nice personalized spin on all this stuff, genuflect, and try to preserve your livelihoods. That's what people are doing. You know, it's a scary, scary time of thought policing.
It really is. And you know, I shared an article yesterday. Andrew Wilkow shared it and said, I'm old enough to remember when the entire media at the Democrats said that Mitt Romney was a racist, because Mitt Romney came out over the weekend with the Black Lives Matter protesters, right?
Yeah.
NBC News, the main picture that they have for this article is a man wearing a shirt that says Black Power. And I said to myself, I tweeted, what would happen if there was a white person kneeling down like that, wearing a shirt that said white power? Oh, Lord.
It's going to get much more uglier.
I hate to say it. I know.
Who knows? Who even knows that? You know, I'm looking at it this way. The United States is in a situation like the Soviet Union was years ago. The relationship between the states is becoming strained. The ability for the federal government to keep things together and to keep this party going financially has been destroyed. We're just putzing along here with this this currency that we have. I really don't see how this could be kept together. I'm sure some people will try to fuse it together, but it's not going to be very pretty.
I, you know, and not only that, but we're going to end a little early today, but before we do, this man who was killed or died, he's now being paraded around the country. They're having a public viewing for him in Houston. Well, how do their family live with themselves after doing this? I don't understand. Like, you just politicized your brother's death to the point where you had political leaders speaking at his funeral, people that have no idea who he is coming for their photo op. It's just sick. I'm sorry.
Wait. They're sending George Floyd's casket and remains to Houston, Texas?
Thousands of mourners are anticipated to attend a public viewing in Houston on Monday for George Floyd, whose death in Minneapolis on May 25th has sparked waves of protests across the country.
Open casket?
I don't know. It says public viewing. It's trending right now on Twitter, of course. Let me see if I can find this real quick. We'll play it. Here it is. It's right at the top here. Let's listen.
Matter. We've heard our people cry out, I can't breathe. We've heard our people speak out, Black Lives Matter.
This is just makes me sick. I can't listen to it anymore. Until these people realize they're being used as a political tool, nothing will change. And
it's happening, though. Well, there is that awakening that's going on.
I know.
I know. Even though CNN wanted to let everybody know that Trump only has 41% up against Biden's 55 today.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Isn't that amazing?
I'm sure the man that can't even get a sentence out is going to beat President Trump. I can't wait for the first debate. Can't wait.
Imagine how that happens. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for today, Frank. We're just going to stop now.
Well, Monday.
Oh, by the way, real quick, the photo that was tweeted out as though it made it look as though George Floyd was on the Obama Foundation website a week before the death of George Floyd. That's not true. The picture was changed on the website after that URL was already posted. So the URL then picked up the new picture. That's all.
Okay. All right. So that's it. So it's one of those situations where you change the picture on like the blog itself and it just goes and updates everywhere.
Yeah, it updates all the rest of the links. There's a couple of them it didn't update on that have, and I'm assuming that there is a slight difference in the URL there because you can't see the full URL on the tweet. So it's just not what everybody is saying it is. And it just makes people look silly when they hear, when, you know, so for example, Carpe Donctum on Twitter was trying to explain this to folks. And what he did is he changed a picture that was at memeworld.com at a certain URL to read on June 7th. Carpe Donctum is going to explain to everybody why a picture on Barack Obama's foundation website changed and everybody will be mad at him for it. He put that up and then showed a tweet from Jack Posobiec from like a year ago that had that photo. So if you were to have come, gotcha. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like he was just trying to show people like, look, see, this is how it's done. Like, no.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I actually hadn't even seen.
Oh, Cory Booker speaking.
I haven't even seen what was going on with it. I knew that some people were saying that I didn't even know what the hell the details were. That there was something that was posted too early, you know, because there's always angles of people.
Yeah, they do the same thing with websites that say the story happened on, like, let's say 5/27, but that the event didn't happen till 5/29, and they're like, how did this happen? And there's an explanation for it. They're just updating a template page that hasn't caught up yet.
Or a Facebook memorial page that was up 3 days before a tragic event.
Yeah,
I've seen these stories before. Yeah, I didn't know the details, so now I know.
Yeah, well, you'll see a whole bunch of shenanigans going on around, like people trying to twist themselves into pretzels to, instead of just saying like, okay, I get it, mistake. They're trying to like justify. Like, they're just walking away from the truth and not paying any attention to it and trying to come up with some reason why it is. You know what I'm saying? It's just very strange. Like, I don't understand it. You know, it's almost like if somebody said the sky is not actually blue, that's a big piece of cellophane that's over, you know, the dome. But then you send a rocket up and the cellophane doesn't break and people are still trying to just prove to you that it's cellophane.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I don't know.
Yeah. No, hey, there's just a lot of people just, everybody has something that they stick to.
Yeah. And, confirmation bias.
Yeah, it is. And that's just, it doesn't matter what the hell it is. And we all have to work through it sometimes.
It's hard. Especially when you're lied to from so many different angles all the time. It's like nearly impossible. Like, who do people trust? You're lied to by everybody. Everybody lies. Everyone. The media lies. The politicians lie. You just realized everybody's lying. So now you don't believe anything. It's the same cycle over and over again. And it takes a while to get through that. So
it does. And it's painful along the way. It is.
Hell yeah, it is. I just happened to have done it 20 years ago. So I understand it. But it was just done earlier than most other people, or some other people anyway. So that's why we try really hard to make sure that we get things right.
I just wish people would chill out.
Yeah, people need to chill out.
I wish there was a way for people to chill out and really come together on things.
You know, I was talking to Will last night before we end today. And we were just saying, like, everybody internalizes stress in their own way, you know. And we have not had any normalcy in this country for an entire year, half a year. Like, it has been absolute chaos for 6 months. And before that, it wasn't that great either. So we as Americans are living in a perpetual state of stress all the time, especially if you're a news buff. And everybody internalizes it differently. Like, my husband's not a news buff, and he is, like, beside himself about all this stuff. So I can only imagine what most people are feeling out there, myself included.
Yeah, I have. That's the whole thing about this, too, because I've been speaking to a few friends of mine. They're older than me. Probably, like, you know, twice my age, some of them, who, you know, black, white, but they all come up in the same part of the country, in the same kind of neighborhoods. They have the same backgrounds, even though they're different races. And, you know, they lived in...
They can't have the same backgrounds.
Oh, yeah. And they live certain lives that we would not have... We wouldn't have lived, you know. They've been involved in things, and they've seen some shit, you know. And I talked to them about all this stuff, you know. What are you seeing? Because, of course, there's the street view of race relations and police and all that stuff. And I listen. I don't discount anybody, because that's the biggest thing here. You are from New York. You live in the Carolinas now. I'm still on up here. There's people that are listening from all over the world, yep, in different parts of the country. And no matter where you are, I'm never going to be one to say, oh, okay. Like my stepfather Skip, that I've known, you know, my entire life now. Black man. He's my father. You know, I have several fathers. Some are black, some are gay, you know, and I have this conversation with him every once in a while. And he'll say, you know, Frank, you have no clue, you know, what it's like, though. You know, and how many times I've been pulled over just because I'm black and I'm driving through a neighborhood that people don't know me in. And then I tell him, you know, Skip, I'm not sitting here telling you, Skip, that no, you're just imagining that never happened to you. This stuff doesn't happen. I'm not saying that. All I'm trying to tell people is that no matter what your prejudices are and what your life experiences have shown you and what you have pulled away from life based on those experiences, I'm not going to blame you for feeling the way you do about one group or another. But there has to come to a time when everybody sees that there is strings attached to these real life traumas that we all experience in one neighborhood, one city, one state, one country or another. And those strings are being tied into a much bigger mechanism that is hovering above everything. And it is triggering people into action that benefits the few above it all. And so what we're dealing with right now, nobody's going to make out with it. Nobody's going to make out on it. And at the same time, nobody's even denying anybody's pain. If you come up in a poor neighborhood with high crime, you have bad relationship with the police, who the hell is anybody to deny that if that is your actual experience? What we're saying is everybody's being triggered by an outside force, and it's to nobody's advantage. And it's and the timing is just so obvious. We're in another damn election year and this shit is happening, and it's also cyclical, you know, and because the logic is not consistent at all, it keeps people confused and angry and insane.
Yeah, well said. You have been listening to the Crazy Monday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with...
Yes, Monday, new week, Val, and...
Beans! You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and RadioInfluence.com. We will see you on Wednesday.
Later.
This is a Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Hey, everybody. This week on Duffified Live from the Rosendale Collective, we've got Chef Rich Rosendale. This guy uses like 100% of his brain.
I also think from the way people eat, I definitely see kind of refocusing and realigning and reestablishing stronger supply chains locally. I mean, we were even talking the other day about, like, look, do we want to partner with or maybe even invest in our own farm around here? And so we don't have the exposure of the supply chain issues. And also, even your customer, I mean, it's more relevant now. I think it's going to be more relevant to your guest as far as, like, hey, where are you getting this from? Where is this meat coming from? Where are these, are these vegetables safe? I still think that's going to be a huge factor, a big shift. And also plant-based is going to continue to be on the rise, for sure. And actually, I tell a lot of people this, that our clients that we work with, where they're like, if I say plant-based to them, they're like, oh, we don't want to go vegetarian. It's like, no. So plant-based is really kind of more the marketing buzzword, not really vegetarian, because a plant-based meal is something that actually people that are meat eaters may want to eat more vegetables or more plants in their diet. But when you say right. vegetarian, that's actually kind of – that's a different diet. But I'm just saying that I think that you will still see even more momentum with just plant-based eating, where and their customers, ironically, are not vegetarians. They're actually going after more meat eaters to just maybe lessen the amount of meat consumption that they eat over the course of a week.
Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.